Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello everyone, I'm your host, Doran Rosenfeld, and this is going to be a great show tonight, because I have a person who works at this Mind Eye Institute, and a patient who was helped by the Mind Eye Institute. They're both going to be talking about their perspectives. So a little introduction. This organization particularly helps people with traumatic brain injury and some other types of brain dysfunction. But it basically, we get this institute which puts the eyes in a real world context and connects them with the rest of the brain so they work better. And Myrna Hayes wears special lenses, and she'll talk about that. She'll basically discuss her experience following a traumatic brain injury. She tried everything and nothing worked until she explored this Mind Eye Institute. Now, Myrna is able to work and think coherently by wearing these special glasses. These glasses were individually created for her using her particular pattern of navigation of the world. And she's going to talk tonight about that. And a representative of the Mind Eye Institute, Kathy Gorchowski, she's a patient care advocate. And she's going to briefly discuss the neuroscience behind the coordination of the audio and visual systems to offer patients a lasting and profound impact following brain trauma. She was the victim of her own TBI prior to her discovery of and later employment with the Mind Eye Institute. Now, this Mind Eye Institute is an optometric practice for almost 30 years now, with an emphasis on neuro-optometric rehabilitation. That is, working with the whole patient, not just the eyes. The signals travel in a unique pathway for each person using a pattern specific to each person. We all recognize the world in our own ways. The cardiac, endocrine, neurological, and other systems basically influence the way we relate to the world. The Mind-Eye Research Division is very active, focusing on mining the secrets of retinal, electrical, and biochemical connections and how they affect these systems. The Mind-Eye Institute works with cases of traumatic brain injuries, post-concussive syndrome, challenges related to autism, and learning and developmental challenge. So I'll let these two women talk. Kathy, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Mind Eye Institute to begin with?
Hey, thank you for that great introduction there. First off, I'd like to state that I'm not a doctor nor a neuroscientist, but because I did experience a brain injury myself, I like to say that I learned through the school of hard knocks, and the pun is intended there. So a little bit about Mind Eye and the unique approach that it takes. Mind Eye optometrists, they prescribe brain glasses is what we call them. We call them brain wear. And there were multiple goals with the brain wear, but a goal, for example, is to link and synchronize the patient's perception of where they are in their world, okay, by using sound and sight. So what we do is our doctors, they evaluate how a person visualizes the surrounding space by seeing, and then they assess how they perceive and locate targets in the environment by listening. Our founder, Dr. Zielinski, about somewhere a little over 25 years ago, had discovered a method with which to evaluate as well as treat individuals who may have an auditory and visual disconnect. It's quite common with individuals when they have a concussion or a brain injury or a stroke. However, they, you know, some people who have had brain surgery can have some problems thereafter. But one of the significant symptoms can be, I mean, and there can be multiple symptoms of balance problems, again, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, some cognitive processing delays and things like that. Well, Dr. Zielinski had discovered a process that she then named Z-Bell testing, Z standing for Zielinski, and she patented a test whereby she's able to use a Z-Bell to determine a number of things about a person. Do they know where their body is in space? Are their ears and their eyes balanced? Excuse me. And things like that. So ultimately, the goals will be multiple. People come to us when it comes to a brain injury or a stroke, or even autism spectrum where there's a lack of alignment sometimes between the auditory and the visual, we're able to help them reintegrate the systems to create a more comfortable feeling for them day to day. Because a lot of patients, when their auditory and their visual are out of sync, or if their peripheral vision and their central vision are out of sync, it leads to them being just not comfortable on a daily basis. And some people come to us, they say they've got fight or flight, high anxiety. Other individuals come to us because they've got learning disabilities, and we're able to help between, doing a number of tests and then prescribing therapeutic lenses. We can order, we can offer some optometric interventions that will selectively stimulate light onto the retina and can help improve the patient's perception. So when it comes to learning, an example might be when you're in a classroom as a child or an adult learner, if you're having some issues with your perception of your auditory and your visual space, some children or adults, when they're learning, they can either look at the teacher or listen to the teacher, but they can't do both at the same time. And so think about a student who has to bring their head up and down from looking at the front board, whether it's a smart board or a regular chalkboard, and then they have to look down and they have to be listening. There's multiple things going on there. And if there's some concerns where there's attention issues, these are all types of things that we help.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And this Eye Institute does research on this particular disability so they can help people.
Right. Yes. And neuroscience is actually, as it turns out from my experience, I didn't know this originally, but once I went through this process, neuroscience is a fascinating study. The doctors have a lot of research that backs up or supports how we are currently working with the brain, the eyes, and the ears to kind of reintegrate them. And it's really a fascinating field, the auditory and visual integration and the understanding of stimulation of the retina and neuromodulation and what's that going to do.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So let's bring this back to reality. Myrna, why don't you talk about your experience after going to them?
Hi, this is Myrna Hayes, and I actually know Doran because she and her husband, Bob Woolery, are my chiropractors, and I met them probably quite some time ago, but I specifically went to them as a patient after one of a number of auto accidents, and I learned that both of them have unique head injuries, traumatic brain injuries, and so of course we kind of bonded over that. It will be 22 years ago in January that I was in an auto accident and I suffered what's thought to be a mild traumatic brain injury, and I had a really severe C4 a whiplash, which wasn't diagnosed initially, like for months. And I ended up going to a chiropractor who specialized in neurology, and she diagnosed that and began treating that. However, 10 months into my recovery, I still wasn't allowed by my medical doctor to drive because I didn't pass his tests. He said if I got stopped, I would, I'd be charged with drunk driving. I couldn't pass any of those tests that they administer. And so that was a real struggle. And I had, I stuttered a lot. I had a zero confidence in my ability to conduct my life. And my friends were kind of hovering over me. I'd lost everything, including my interest in humor, laughing. I had severe vertigo for definitely 2.5 years and then probably closer to 4.5 before it started to lift. So it was just sort of a miserable life. And of course I couldn't go on working. And my doctor referred me 10 months after the injury to UC San Francisco, and I was evaluated there by a neuropsychologist who turned out to be the president of the American Academy of Neuropsychology, Dr. Ronald Roof. And most remarkable person, I was lucky enough to fail some of his tests entirely and excel at some of them in the 99th percentile. So that interested him. And he, after diagnosed me with post-traumatic stress disorder, he offered through various ways that we finally came to have me as a patient to try to see if he could help me out any. And we met together almost every week for 2.5 years at his office in San Francisco. And I was able to learn to, train my brain to a certain extent to reduce to some extent the level of post-traumatic stress that I was experiencing, and was able to go back to driving, to speaking, and but not to conduct my life professionally any longer. It just was too much. So I've always been, ever since, on the search for ways to relieve the continuing symptoms of this, sort of double diagnosis. And I actually saw the Mind Eye Institute, some of its videos on Facebook almost 2 years ago. So they intrigued me because I said, this is me, or that's me, or I would cry. At the end of a short, informational video. And so I did reach out to them. It was probably around a year ago, April, Kathy, you might have the actual records, but and and I went to Chicago to the Mind Eye Institute in July of this year. So I've had my glasses, my brainwear glasses, and my prism goggles since about 10 days after I arrived back home. So I'm wearing them for now, what, basically August, September, and part of October.
Wow. That's thank you for sharing that. And I'll just chime in, like, you know, with a little related content to what you've said to the best of my ability.
Sure.
So one of the things that's interesting about the process and the treatments and the background with Mind Eye is that most current eyesight testing is based on standards that were established in the 1800s, right? And back in the day, and most of us are familiar with, you know, can you see 20/20? Can you see that sign across the room? You know, which is clearer, one or two? That type of testing technique, that evaluates your central visual acuity or your central eyesight. Then that actually, and this is something that I learned that really was amazing, was that your central visual acuity, also, you know, known as your clarity, is really representing only 6% of your overall visual function. The other 94% of our visual function happens to be in the peripheral eyesight, okay? The difference with what we're doing with Mind Eye treatment, and we get lots and lots of patients who will come to us who have gone to multiple optometrists or neuro-optometrists in specific, but our emphasis is on the peripheral vision, okay? So we pay a particular attention to how the peripheral eyesight is working. Is it working in balance, for example, with the central vision? Is the person, you know, in today's day and age, what's different between like the 1800s and then now is we are doing such different usage of our eyes. Like back in the day in the 1800s, you know, people were working on a farm and they would have a vast expanse within their view. They would see far away distance and things like that would be like the majority of their day perhaps. But now, you know, we're doing so much up close. You know, we're scanning computer screens all the time. We're shifting our attention back and forth from, you know, like when we're in traffic, from the traffic itself to the signs, to the GPS, you know, and watching what we're doing driving, hopefully there. But we have to be able to better use the peripheral and the central together, okay, in today's living society versus back when, right? And so when it comes to like what Myrna was saying, you know, that she had struggles after this head injury, it is so common. Central and the peripheral vision are no longer in sync, that people aren't able to fix their conscious attention the way they want to do it. They're not able to quite process with their vision the way they are accustomed to. And so I just thought I would, you know, share that, Myrna, because, you know, you mentioned several things that actually are not uncommon, I'll say, with, you know, a brain injury. You mentioned stuttering. That happens to a number of people. I know I had mentioned to Myrna that I did a little bit of sleuthing and kind of read through a little bit of the information on her. She had light and sound sensitivity. That's really common with, you know, any kind of head injury. Or even again, individuals who are just, there are individuals who are born with sensory issues where they're hypersensitive to different lights and sound and things like that. A sense of overwhelm, Myrna, is common. Difficulty in concentrating or focusing becomes more problematic. So you hit upon quite a few things. That the severe vertigo, again, I experienced that as well. When I would get up in the middle of the night, I would have to, like, hold the walls as I walked. just to go to the restroom and things like that. And also I myself too had light and sound sensitivity that were rather extremely difficult. So yeah, I'm so happy to hear though that you're starting this journey with us and proceeding forward. And I'll mention that a little bit, Myrna, and Myrna would probably know this, but for the listener, they may not necessarily. We get lots and lots of questions on social media and things, you know, things like, you know, do I just come one time to the clinic? You know, can you fix me, quote unquote? And we say like, well, we can't, quote unquote, fix you, but your brain will make the needed changes given the right stimuli or stimulus. And so the glasses are able to redirect the incoming light to a healthier portion of the retina and stimulate certain areas of the brain and perhaps kind of filter or dull a little bit of another overactive section of the retina that might be causing you distress or making you feel in fight or flight, or being anxious and things like that. So getting back, though, what I was going to say is that this is a process, and it does work on the concept of neuroplasticity, that our brains have neuroplasticity. I found that to be the most wonderful concept I stumbled upon when I started to do the research on myself with my symptoms and what was going on. I found a great book by Dr. Norman Doidge called The Brain's Way of Healing, and it was all about different unusual cases of people who were able to improve their brain function after the worst of accidents and or circumstances that had happened to them. The concept of neuroplasticity basically is our brains will make changes over time, and we basically try to rewire our brains and, you know, make our habits. You've heard things like, you know, if you do something for, I don't know, a week or 14 days or a month, whatever the time frame is, you build a new habit. That they connect that to the concept of neuroplasticity. So as it relates to treatment for brain injury and using therapeutic lenses, it will still take time. And working, as Myrna, I'm sure you can attest to, you will come to us, you'll get a very thorough evaluation, and they're checking, you know, things like your eyes, are they tracking properly? Okay. things like, you know, your sensory integration, things like I mentioned already, the Z-Bell testing will enable us to determine are your ears and your eyes balanced, okay, and things like that. So you have a very comprehensive initial evaluation, and then the doctor will do some additional testing. You'll get that first pair of glasses. You may only wear those particular pair of glasses for maybe 3 months, 4 months, 2 months, depending on what the doctor suggests. And then you'll come back and be reevaluated and get the next pair of glasses in order to move you forward in progressing and improving your neurovisual function. And often, and then I'm going to let Myrna talk again because I don't want to over talk here, but often patients, one of the first things that happens is patients who come to us are in fight or flight, and really experiencing a lot of environmental overload. They tell me all the time that, you know, I can't be in a room where more than two people are talking at once. And again, I've been through all this too, but just talking, I've spoken to hundreds of people about their brain injuries, and common threads are, you know, visual overload, can't watch TV, can't watch movements too much. Like on TV, I could never watch anything that was moving quickly, like a speed race or something. Couldn't watch commercials because they switch so quickly, things like that. Those are all common to people, you know, people with head injury. Were you going to say something?
Oh, no, I was just agreeing. Yeah, it was a nightmare to watch TV.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. And but the most wonderful news is because of neuroplasticity, you can improve. And even before I started working for MindEye as a care coordinator, I've really became passionate about helping people learn about what can be done about the brain injury, because it really is a devastating, debilitating situation for so many, but yet there's a lot of hope here. And neuroplasticity was what I hung my hat on as a concept for the hope, you know, that I was going to get better, and I did. I got better, you know, but it was a process. It was multiple pairs of lenses. In addition, I do often say to people, it takes a village. So you mentioned working with your chiropractor. I've worked with a functional neurologist chiropractor, and you know, I've worked with other practitioners as well. So I would be remiss if I didn't say often it takes a village to get a person, you know, back to where they need to be after they've had some sort of, you know, head trauma of one type or another.
Wow, that's great.
Thank you, Kathy. Dorn, you might want to try to say something, but otherwise I'll just jump right in.
No, go for it.
I was thinking, oh, my goodness, I don't know what I'm going to say, but Kathy's been a huge help. I'm going to explain a few things that I have experienced improvement in, or that I went there, as Kathy said. I had tremendous light sensitivity to the point where I was I operated a park that I was proud of being a dark sky park, and also that the lights were very low in our visitor center in an old building. And then I more and more have experienced massive amounts of increase in security lights that are not directed down but are directed directly at you as you're driving, massive lights in areas that are almost like being at a port where they're lighting up to daylight standards. And so there was almost no escape anymore to from the light. The neighbors, security lights popping on, waking me up. So that was a big issue, as was the lights actually making me have nausea. I would trip and tip still to the left and hang on to the walls, hang on to things, catch myself a lot. And, of course, with the post-traumatic stress disorder, just massive amounts of anxiety. I am going to say that, and I have a serious problem spelling when I grew up. I remember saying shortly after my brain injury, or being resentful to my doctor, saying, you know, I wasn't a beauty queen. I wasn't a cheerleader, but I had a buff brain. And so I was really disappointed that I could no longer spell. And I still can't. And I now understand how terrible it is for people who can't spell, who can't look the word up because they don't know how to give the computer, you know, a clue. And then I couldn't do math in my head anymore either. So I can't total, let's say, a tip and the amount of the bill for the restaurant. So I leave it blank. Are some of the things. I also have a situation where my doctor explained it, that, you know, when a baby is about 9 months old, I think it is, and they're playing with a toy, you drop a blanket over it, and they don't know to look under the blanket. That's me. So everything lays out everywhere. It looks messy to people. It's embarrassing. If I put one thing over it, I might look for a set of keys for 3 days to 3 months. I can no longer retrace my my steps or my actions. So those are super frustrating, combined with something that, again, my neuropsychologist called perseverance. And that's not like perseverance. It is in that you struggle to work hard at something, but the difference is that with perseverance, you do the exact same thing, expecting a different outcome. And so that's pretty exhausting as well. Flavors are really weird, like toothpaste. It's hard for me to brush my teeth. Just today, I found some children's toothpaste from Burt's Bees, and it's fruity. I'm going to try it because all of the ones that are flavored like mint, which I liked in the past, I can't stand now. I still have panic attacks. I had one in the California Department of Motor Vehicles last week, and there were very kind people. One man who seemed to know all about PTSD was able to grab me, catch me, and hold me for quite some time, and knew exactly what to do. So I'm not going to say that I'm cured, but I am going to tell you just briefly some of the things that have improved very quickly. The light at night and during the day is remarkably improved. My nausea has gone away regarding light. I was asked at 6 weeks, I think it was, when I had a little follow-up interview on the phone with the clinic, what about my sleep? Well, I didn't know and didn't expect, and I don't think I'd been told that I might have improvements to my sleep. But I have a feeling that I have actually had some sort of issue with the sleep and ended up impacting my fibromyalgia diagnosis all along. With some kind of disconnect up there in my noggin, as my dad would call your brain, because all of a sudden I'm sleeping through the night. If I didn't have to get up to go to the bathroom, I would literally never wake up the entire night, and I'm waking up rested. I'm sleeping 8 hours, 9 hours, 7 hours, whatever it is. Straight through, and I'm dreaming or remembering my dreams, and I hadn't had that for all of these years. So I think it's important for people to know that even with this long time since my injury, and with several years of assistance with PTSD, support, I'm already experiencing improvements. I just wanted to mention that I didn't know, some of the things I didn't know about wearing the glasses was, there's changes going on in your brain the minute you put them on. And I didn't know that, they wouldn't, maybe you could only wear them, for 3 minutes or 10 minutes or an hour, and everybody is different. And so I was getting kind of frustrated that I wasn't able to wear them very long before I didn't feel very good. And that's supposed to be, a clue that you should take them off. And Kathy, you can explain in a minute what is happening there. I also got,
sure.
I've had tinnitus in the right ear ever since that injury, but now I, for a while, for maybe about 5 or 6 days, a week, it was loud, like a rushing river, and I thought, oh my God, it's doing, something terrible, and now that's dissipated, and maybe even there's some improvement. I also want to mention that I was having to wear a tight cap, like a stretchy cap, a winter cap, every night, sometimes during the day so that it would kind of hold my head tight. I would always hold my hands on my head and press my skull really tightly a lot. And I haven't had to do that in the last 2 months since I got the glasses. So I only wore them once because it was cold. And then let me see if there, I took just like one other note here. I do want to say that people make a lot of, this is not news to anybody listening, but people make a lot of remarks and they make a lot of fun. They write on social media and they also say a very weird, if not kind of mean things. There's someone running for city council in my neighborhood, in my district, and he just was talking to me one day at the farmer's market a few weeks ago, and he said, you know what, when you talk in public, you sound like a rapper. I didn't know what to say, and I wasn't sure that was a compliment, but I later kind of thought it probably wasn't, you know, and so I guess those are, and someone also wrote recently on the social media that I hide behind my head injury. Yet my doctor had told me to tell people that I have one because that reduces the anxiety of your brain having to hide or compensate for some of the challenges you have finding words or stuttering or whatever. And you know, I found people to be particularly cruel and mean, and it's just out of, well, ignorance or out of being just plain flat-out bullies. So those are some of my experiences at the moment here. So I'll let you fill back in, Kathy, or ask questions, Demi.
I have some thoughts, but I'll let – please go first, yeah.
No, I just want to say this is absolutely fascinating to listen to because, I mean, I had a very serious head injury. I was in the hospital for a year and a half, but luckily light never bothered me. You know, we all have different brains, different levels of functionality, different pathways that we're focused on, and mine just did not include that. Probably because I've had eye problems ever since I was born. And, I mean, I should have discovered this mind-eye issue a long time ago if I'd have helped me.
They probably could. I mean, they really could.
Yeah, I'm sure they could. But anyway, Kathy, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's behind some of the things Myrna was talking about?
Yeah, well, you know, I it's kind of interesting, ladies, as I'm listening, I'm, you know, like writing some phrases that Myrna said, and I circle it on my page because I'm thinking I got to make sure I mention that. So I'm just going to kind of go through some of them, and perhaps it's my own zigzag way of thinking. But she said so many things that were interesting and spot on to both my own experience, but I'm sure a lot of our listeners. Right? So one of the things that I'm just going to kind of, with no particular order, mention, you know, you mentioned you had a buff brain before your injury to the brain, right? And what I want to say about that is something that in my role at MindEye, I've spoken to, you know, hundreds of people. But prior to my role there, I was a big advocate, you know, on Facebook in different brain injury groups. And that was a big statement, not that exact phrasing about the buff brain, but people who basically who had been high-powered executives, high-powered careers, top schools, IQs. Brain injury does not differentiate based upon, you know, your level in society and or academia or anywhere else, right? So you mentioned that buff brain, and I just wanted to point out that just because a person has a brain injury does not mean they're not intelligent. Now, to your point about speaking and the cruelty maybe that some people, you know, show or whatever, whether it be online or just, you know, in a passing comment, sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's not, of course, but if a person speaks a little bit slower because they've had a TBI, individuals who are not in the know may perceive that person as being less intelligent. But my experience, is having spoken to so many people and met some wonderful people, you know, who've gone through this process, is there's a lot of brilliant people who have had a brain injury, you know. So, and then you brought up something about how you then understood, you know, some others a little bit better. And I wrote down the phrase more compassionate, because what happened to me is once I experienced what I experienced, I think I became a much more compassionate person when I looked at people with special needs, when I looked at people who were moving in the parking lot, and they were parked in the handicapped parking, right? Prior to my brain injury, if I saw somebody hop out of a car, quote unquote, from that handicapped parking space, I thought in my little brain, I thought to myself, oh, look at them. They don't need that spot. But to your point yep. about vertigo, things like that, I realize now when I see somebody get out of the car, whether they get out fast or slow from a handicapped location, or whether they're just a person who's struggling moving and moving through the world, I feel like in my own instance, and I think other people have said the same, you feel more compassion now, because you realize when you're walking around with this invisible injury that people do not know that you have. And Myrn, I bet you both of you would feel the same, in that there were times I really wished I had something on my forehead that said, I have a brain injury.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because it's such a struggle, yep. but it's visible mm-hmm. struggle, right? And yes. so anyway, so I just wanted to share the commonality there. To your point about cognitive confusion, you know, and exhaustion. And I wanted to say something about the anxiety and the panic feelings. Often, one of the things that happens, again, getting back to the neurovisual end of this discussion, is if the peripheral vision and the central vision are not working together in sync, you can have peripheral overload, so to speak, as one thing. And then that overload, too much information coming into your brain at once because your peripheral vision is not filtering out properly all of the incoming stimuli, that can lead to those feelings of anxiety and panic. Okay, so I speak to a lot of people who will say that they have extreme anxiety or they have panic attacks, things like that. Sometimes at the root cause, again, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to say that this is in everybody's case, right? But at the root cause can be that, you know, the vision is just struggling to filter out all of the external environmental stimuli, right? And so that leads to exhaustion. So I tell people when I speak with them, I say, your brain is typically working 2 to 10 times as hard to do a simple task in the morning when you get up. So you might start your morning and have some good energy and feel like, okay, I'm going to accomplish some things today. And you do something simple, or you do 2 tasks and you're feeling like you're dragging already, and it's only 10 o'clock, you know. So Myrna, I know, right? So when you were talking about, you know, exhaustion, you know, my note was, you know, about the overload and that type of thing. I was thrilled to hear that you feel like you're dealing better with the lights, and that the nausea's gone and that your sleep is better. That's exciting, and that's a short time. And that's another thing to know too. What's that?
Right. Yeah. Right. Short.
Yeah.
Amount of time.
Yeah, and so what I was going to say is that's another thing with brain injury in terms of improving on the symptoms, is when you work, let's say, with the mind-eye glasses, you might have certain goals for that first pair of glasses. One of them commonly is to try to calm your central nervous system down some if you are in fight or flight, which so many of the people are after having an injury. Thing. Although, again, this can also relate to children and adults who have sensory hypersensitivities, too. You know, so we might, with that first pair of glasses, you know, that may be one of the goals, again, to balance the central and the peripheral vision, balance the eyes and the ears, things like that. But it was interesting to hear what you said about the tinnitus, which is ringing in the ears. That's not uncommon that you'll have, some changes with that as well. And it was interesting that you said it got worse before it got better. That can happen. And to your point about the glasses, it could just be your brain was building up some tolerance. And so when you first get the glasses, they may not tell you to wear them all day. You know, they may say, start with an hour, start with 2 hours, you know, start with 10 minutes, you know. And so sometimes it takes a little bit of time to figure out an individual what their tolerances are, you know. And so you have to build that up. You really covered, you know, a lot of your symptoms, which I think is really helpful to the audience, because I know when I went through this, when I would listen to podcasts similar to this one, it was just like, I'd be like, yeah, that's me. Oh, yeah. Somebody else, you know, because somebody would describe something and I'd be like, yeah. And the sense of relief listening, and that's why we thank you, Doctor, for doing this podcast, okay, as you've been doing, because you're really helping so many people feel understood, you know, which is just a huge, huge piece of things. Wouldn't you agree, Myrna, on that one?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do a lot of, I try to give people updates because I did have to, I would like to mention that MindEye was gracious enough to offer a financial aid application that I made, and I was accepted as a patient with a special financial needs. And so I also did a GoFundMe because I was so concerned that I wouldn't have the money for the glasses. And it did just end up being really wonderful because now I already have, I didn't really know until I got there that you're supposed to come back. And that you would get new glasses. And so coming from the Bay Area in California to Chicago, you know, a pretty big cost and journey. And I hadn't flown for 21 years. So imagine. Wow. But, well, you can imagine. But like I would say that United was absolutely unbelievable because on the phone, when we made the reservation, we talked with someone who said, well, we're just going to give you wheelchair service. All you do is just walk in, go to the counter and say, I need a wheelchair, and we'll get you through to the gate. Don't you worry. And this was just all amazing to me because I didn't even have to get to the counter. I got to an individual just inside the door, and I was already in a wheelchair, and I was straight through TSA, and I was at the boarding, you know, at the boarding place. And I was accommodated throughout my trip. And I can walk just fine, but it reduced the stress, and it made it so that, you know, I just had this single attendant straight through, and it was both ways. So yeah. I have been posting a lot. And I think that people are, well, they certainly don't understand the juggles that I got. And I said, these are not my glasses. And I even wrote it on the photo, you know, with a little captioning. But, man, I had like 100 people say, those are the most radical glasses. I'm so glad you picked out something so so wild. And I'm like, no, wait till you see my glasses. They blend in with my cheeks and my hair, and you won't even believe. But they were just crazed by those goggles. And, of course, I try to explain to people, no, I still use those, but I only do them, a couple times a day. And quite truthfully, I'm going to admit to a couple of things. And this is hard because I'm ashamed. And I can't pick up the phone and call you and say, hey, you know what? I'm only doing those goggles once a day because I forget to do it, or I only do it in the morning and then I forget to do it at night, or I just get too tired. And then the other thing is I can't remember which legs when you do the part where you say something about your a topic, and then you say all the different words that relate to it, and you're supposed to slap, pat your leg. I can't remember whether I'm supposed to cross my hands or not over to right hand to left leg. It's things like that I don't know. It's so crazy that you would think that I would just pick up the phone, but I don't.
Now that you know me, Myrna, you can reach out. And I do want to just interject and say no shame here about the prism goggles, but I'm going to explain what that is, okay, if it's okay with you. And I'll also explain about, the game kind of thing. But so we don't just use eyeglasses at MindEye. There will potentially be other tools depending upon the need. And so one of the needs of some of our patients is something called prism goggles. And again, the prisms redirect, incoming light, to a certain area in your brain. The doctors figure out what area in your brain needs to be, perhaps stimulated, or new pathways need to be made. And so they may ask a patient to, in the morning for, let's say, 5 minutes, wear these, and they're really can be funky looking, I'll say that. They're these goggles that, you put on, and they're set to a certain location with the lenses. And so you might do that for 5 minutes in the morning, as you were, saying, Myrna, and then maybe you have to do it again at night, okay? So that is going to be utilized, for one purpose or another. It might alter the way that the light passes through your retina, okay? And then that can help your brain reinterpret or react to information in a different way, okay? And it can impact your spatial awareness. It can impact body posture, things like that. But that might be one tool, the prism goggles. The lenses, we've already mentioned multiple times. That's another tool. We often will give people what are called brain games. The games, the function can be to stimulate visualization skills. A lot of people who either, whether it's a learning disability or whether it's someone that's on the spectrum or somebody who's had an injury, they may not be good at visualizing. And so the games may help to re-stimulate that, if you will. So you were mentioning a tapping game where they might tell you to tap with your right hand on your left leg and then, say all of the names of fruits that you can think of or something like that, or, go through a list of colors. Because talking and then the rhythmic activity of tapping, okay, you're multitasking. And one of the complaints that people, when they've been struggling with neurovisual concerns or neural cognitive processing, they'll say things like, I can no longer multitask. Okay, so what seems like a basic game will not necessarily be simple to you, Myrna, or anyone else when you're struggling. But the idea is to kind of build up that ability again. And so So, you know, there were goals for it. So you might be given brainwear glasses. You might be given prism goggles. You might be given some games to do. You might even have something called occlusion filters that are put on the glasses. And these are these, like, they look like tiny pieces of tape. But the occlusion filters.
Yep, I have tape on my glasses on my left lens.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the occlusion filters will block off various portions of retinal receptors, okay? So it'll block off different light to a specific area of the retina. And that'll result in a change between the central and the peripheral signaling pathways, things like that. So even if I make a statement like that, I'm not going to lie, I fully understand it. What was that? Is that the message that it's on?
No, about that. That's a motorcycle outside my house.
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, sorry. You know, even though I'm saying these things as if I'm an expert, I still have to say again, I'm not a doctor, I'm not an expert, but just having been what I've been through, I too had occlusion tape or occlusion filters on the glasses. So there's going to be different tools potentially. So it's not 100%, oh, you're going to come to the clinic and you get these magic glasses. It has nothing to do with magic. It has to do with, really, strictly speaking, neuroscience and what the doctors have learned between their knowledge of neuroscience and then trial and error. As many inventions or discoveries happen, Dr. Zielinski happened upon the Z-Bell testing process quite accidentally, okay? And then when she noticed it with one patient who she'd been, you know, ringing a bell near and noticed that the person didn't know where that sound was in space, she started to do it in other locations with this person, and she started to make the initial discovery about, auditory localization and our bodies knowing where we are in space and things like that. So I wanted to make sure to let you know that it does take tolerance, you know, so you oftentimes you have to build up the tolerance, you know, to the glasses. Some people can put them on and wear them for 5 hours right away. Other people might be lucky if they can wear them for 5 minutes, you know. And as you alluded to, sometimes it can feel a little bit worse than better initially. But then suddenly you find as you build up tolerance that, oh, wow, now I'm wearing them 3 hours. I couldn't wear them 5 minutes the first day. Now I'm up to 3 hours. Now I'm up to 4 hours. And then you'll see more and more, improvements in your visual processing and auditory processing.
That's fascinating.
I have found that, it was very helpful to speak to the person I talked with after the 6 weeks of wearing the glasses. Or maybe it was 6 weeks since my visit and maybe 5 weeks of the glasses, because they said, they assured me, like you have, that in fact, some people don't ever get to a point where they can wear the glasses, throughout their day or whatever. And then also that, you know, some of the directions that come with it, that, you know, you probably shouldn't wear them when you're driving, at least initially, and when you're walking. And I found that it was amazing to me that I could wear them much longer when I was out by the San Francisco Bay, where it was very bright, full daylight, the water was reflecting. And yet, because I was, like you're saying, I was back in the 1800s, I wasn't looking at my phone screen, it didn't seem to bother me. And it's not really exactly a nausea, but it is a funny feeling, as the directions say. And when it's time to take those off, could you tell a little bit about what the... You shouldn't just power through and see how much longer you can wear them, because talk a little bit about, you know, what you're trying to accomplish with the brain versus just sort of whipping it into shape. I mean, wearing them longer isn't necessarily past what you can endure, you know, isn't really being helpful is what I understand.
I can definitely, and ironically, I happen to find something here that is talking about the new brainwear, and it's talking about adjusting to the glasses. So I'm just going to read this a little bit to you. But it basically says that the brainwear is therapeutic and that the lenses will likely require a period of adjustment. Each person has different modes of processing, and they range from comfort to tolerance to protective to breakdown mode. Okay.
There.
And so you need to initially, when you get these lenses, you know, you need to learn your tolerance level and comfort range. And so this is what the handout sheet that they actually give people when they come to the clinic, it says you will have to build up a tolerance level and comfort range for wearing your new glasses. To do so, you must avoid reaching protective mode. Every person, of course, is different. Comfort is usually compromised in our patients. Tolerance is more common. So when your maximum tolerance level is reached, your body shifts into protective mode. So wearing your glasses for the first time will provide you a measure of individual tolerance mode. For example, you may reach maximum tolerance in 10 minutes, a half hour, or even 3 hours. For some patients, it may be as quick as 30 seconds. Okay, so when you get the glasses, whether it's your first pair or the next pair that you get, it says to take some notes about how much time it takes to reach the edge of your tolerance. That's the point where you begin to feel funny or you feel uncomfortable while you're wearing the glasses. Then it says remove them immediately and allow your brain a few hours to reset or rest and recuperate. So does that answer, you know, somewhat the thinking on that question, Myrna?
Yeah, I just wanted you to bring that out because that's definitely my experience, but the directions were very helpful in that way that it's not going to help your brain. It's going to start to back off and like resent, if you will, having to wear the glasses, which isn't the point you're trying to make with it. You're trying to help it do new things. I think Dr. Zielinski, one time she said that it will, you're not really doing anything to directly to the brain. You're giving it these tools that it somehow does with this new information, but that you could be plugging something back in that got unplugged in that injury or that got loose, she said, or you might be building a pathway that didn't even exist since you were born, like you were talking about.
True.
Doran, about not ever having, you know, always having some issues with your eyesight. I remember you telling me that you get terrible headaches or have had terrible headaches with your brain injury. I've never had a headache for a single day, but I never had them before and I never had them during. But nausea and vertigo, terrible.
Hmm. Well, I was going to bring up something that you said as it relates to, you know, again, building up the tolerance. There are differing philosophies as it relates to treatment of brain injury. I think the three of us could agree on that, right? And the thing is when I first, before I came to mind, when I first had the brain injury, first of all, I had no idea what had hit me. And I don't mean that as a pun. I mean like, oh my goodness, I didn't know the journey that my life was going to change forever, right? You know, I just thought a phrase that I came to dislike greatly was, oh, you just have a mild brain injury, or you just have a concussion. I hated that once I lived it, right? Because that was very minimalizing of what was really going on. And there was a bit of ignorance that even some of the medical, mainstream medical that I had dealt with, establishment, really were just rather dismissive, right? Mm-hmm. But one of the things about the tolerance that we were just discussing, you know, when you get the glasses, is another thing that had happened along my journey, and you both may have experienced similar things, was when I went to, I had gone to physical therapy because I had vertigo like you did, Myrna, and then they said, oh, well, you have, you know, vestibular problems. That was my first introduction to third vestibular, or vertigo for that matter, because I'd never had those things. And so I go to a specialist, a vestibular physical therapist who supposedly specialized, right, in vestibular issues and brain injuries and things like that. Well, they definitely had a very, in hindsight, and I say this very much in hindsight, a very different philosophy, I'll say, in treating brain injury. And that philosophy was more about habituation. And what I mean by that is they said things like, oh, you're struggling in the store? You just need to keep going in the store. Your brain, you know, your mind will get going in that store, right? So everything was about habituation. And so, like, I can remember them having me do the absolute most horrific exercise, and it made me like sick for 2 days following it, but they were going to habituate me. And so they said, we want you to walk down the hallway staring at this checkerboard in your hand, moving your head to the left and the right by, you know, 30 degrees or 45 degrees back and forth while you walk. I went twice up and down the hall, and I sat down, and I honestly could not move for over a half hour, and it hit me for another 24 to 36 hours where I was good for zero. But again, their idea was, we're just going to toughen you up, and we're going to habituate you, and that's going to solve your brain injury. So, you know, that was an example of going well beyond protective mode and putting the body in 1,000%, you know, fight or flight kind of thing. And so, you know, you just don't want to be there kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Never having had a brain injury is a huge disadvantage for understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of doctors think they have a good idea what to do. They have no idea, unless they've had a head injury, what to do.
Absolutely.
Well, and we don't, as victims of a head injury, we don't know what to do either. So you feel pretty damn lost.
Yeah.
Well, I would imagine you as a chiropractor, Doran, now probably, you know, have so much good extra knowledge, you know, and if you wanted to learn more, you may already know of Dr. Ted Tarek, who, you know, teaches functional neurology to chiropractors, there's a lot of wisdom in the teachings there, you know. But again, I go back to, it can take a village to help someone, you know, with a surgery. So while MindEye, you know, does their share of treating, just, I mean, through the years they've treated thousands of people, and you know, just you know, I myself, of course, am very loyal to them from the perspective, because they helped me so much as well. But, you know, it still does take a village, you know, for many people and that type of thing. So,
yeah. Well, after my injury, I mean, see, I was just out of college when I had my injury. And I joined the Peace Corps. I was down in Belize, Central America. And I was hit by a tortilla truck, and I was shipped back to the United States to be in a hospital for a year and a half. Then I returned to Belize because I wanted to experience it. I met a chiropractor there, and believe it or not, he took one look at me and just had me crawling back and forth across the floor. So the whole session, I was just crawling back and forth across the floor. That helped me so much. I became a chiropractor because of that.
See, now
I
am not
intended to be a chiropractor, but that helped me so much getting my brain back, the basic learning of right hand and left foot and cross crawling and making the pathways. It helped me so much. I couldn't believe it.
That's a fabulous
wow.
story, though. Look at how many people you now help because of having had that bad experience, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's just so great that, you know, they say the Peace Corps helps you determine what you want to do with your life. Well, it certainly did for me. Not the way I did, but it did for me. And I'm kind of hard-headed. I won't listen to anybody unless I know they kind of have some idea what they're talking about. And if anyone had told me that, I would have laughed in their face. But after experiencing crawling back and forth across the floor, I'm a chiropractor now.
Well, you know, Doran, I think you need to adopt my line that you learned from the School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah, big time.
Well,
big
you know,
time.
It's great, though, and I think, Myrna, I think you're definitely going to, you know, you're already doing this by doing an interview like this and doing, I'm sure, some of the things that you've been doing for outreach, but, you know, we are the voices of brain injury as it relates to, as I mentioned, you know, going back to the fact that you're doing this podcast, Doran, it's so helpful for people who are just struggling because you find yourself in this land of quagmire, land of nightmare, and it's debilitating. And you're going doctor to doctor quite often when this happens to you. And people are looking at you and telling you, and this is another favorite line, you both would agree, you look fine. You look like you're doing great.
Yeah.
And I can laugh at it now because I'm amongst people who understand the irony of that, you know. But the thing is so each of us in our own way is, you know, trying to help others, you know, who are just landing in this, I call it a no man's land at first, you know, it's rough. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention one other tool for the listeners, and that is a book called The Ghost in My Brain, and it's by an author named Dr. Clark Elliott. And he's actually the reason that I'm talking with you today, meaning that he wrote a book where he described his brain injury, and he had been struggling for about 8 years with the after effects of a minor fender bender where he had gotten whiplash. Within a short time, he thought he was fine in the car accident. It wasn't a very, you know, big accident or anything like that. But within a short time, he ended up having kind of some bizarre, you know, symptoms. And then his symptoms, you know, were very debilitating, though. The brilliant part of it is that when I say this man is brilliant, he truly is. He's a professor of artificial intelligence at DePaul University. And he had a very prestigious position, and he still does, but he was trying to function, speaking of one of those high IQ people that really, you know, gets taken for the bad hit of the brain injury. And long story short, he wrote this book called The Ghost in My Brain. It has become almost a cult classic amongst people who have had brain injuries. And with my particular situation, about 4 months into my injury, I went into the library and I found this book by happenstance because my injury was in 2015. The book had just arrived in the library because it was published in 2015.
Oh.
And when I when I read the book, I could not put it down because he was describing, and Myrna, I don't know if you've read it yet, but he was describing verbatim what these symptoms can be like. And when I read what he wrote, and he wrote about Dr. Zielinski, he wrote about another doctor, Dr. Donnelly Marcus, who also is in the same area as we are at Mind Eye. She's in Highland Park, Illinois, which is right next to Northbrook where we are. And those two doctors worked side by side to help Clark Elliott regain his cognitive functioning, okay? And his book is just amazing. I got the book. I underlined all kinds of things in it because I was like, that's me. That's me. Yeah, yeah, that's me. And then my mom read it, and she couldn't put it down, and she says, this is exactly what you've been trying to tell the doctors, and they're not hearing you, because she was my part of my support system, and she went with me to different doctor appointments. And so when she read it, she's like, this is exactly what you've been saying all along, and they don't get it. And then my husband read it, and so I really feel that that's a wonderful book for people who, both caregivers and people who have sustained a brain injury, to read, you know, because it really, it speaks to the challenges, I'll say, to having a brain injury.
I want to say that he was one of the first testimonial videos that I watched on your Facebook post. Mm-hmm. And I have not read the book because I have not read a book cover to cover.
Understood.
In 21 years.
Yeah.
And
right.
I'm looking forward to the day when I can read more than one page 15 times over.
Very kind. Yeah. It's on Audible, though, too.
Well, I believe you. I would have to figure out how the heck, you know, to even find that. But I guess I do want to say that one of the things that was compelling, and I've watched dozens of your testimonials. I super encourage people to do that because they will be so inspiring because of the level of frustration and disappointment and struggle that people have gone through, that you'll hear in their voices the desperation and then the improvement, some level of improvement that people have. And but I was taken by him saying that totally terribly messy and confusing and not right, and that he had almost lost his home. And that is very easy to do when you're on disability, as I have been, because you make so little income. And, you know, I didn't get any insurance settlement or anything like that, and a lot of people don't. So I think this is it's just been a game changer for me. I'm looking forward to, I've begun working in my yard. I have more stamina. I have less exhaustion, less discouragement and depression. And so that's been lucky that it's been during the summertime. And we'll see how the winter goes, because I fear winters because they're so miserable for me, having operated a park and been outside for 13 years. And and I can't even imagine what it's going to be like to come to Chicago in November. And I've been in New York in November. I've been in Washington, D.C. in November. So that's going to be new. But I'm also looking forward to, my friends moved from Vallejo back to where one of them grew up in Highland Park, in Prospect Park. And he took me after my 4 hours of testing and deciding what glasses to wear. He took me to the Chicago Botanical Garden, so close by to where you are. And that was such an incredible experience. And we get to go there. We already have tickets to go to the night light thing. And of course, I love my Christmas lights, and I'll be able to go. And you know, nothing will be too bright, but it'll be just a real treat to go as part of coming back for my evaluation and maybe a new prescription. So,
well, that's awesome.
So, Kathy, why don't you tell us right here how to find the Mind Eye Institute?
Okay. Well, the website is very simple. It's www.mindeye.com. Okay.
Yeah, but
go ahead.
Oh, I was just, what about that dash? You don't have to put the dash in? No.
No, I think you just type in mindeye.com or www.mindeye.com.
Oh, okay.
And then the easiest way, if somebody has questions, is we have a contact us form where you can just, if you give your contact information, you can ask to have somebody schedule a call for you. They don't charge, like, you know, to talk to you about what your concerns are, your questions, because these types of phone calls are very complex, okay? Like, I spent over a year where I would talk to people all day long. Most calls are, you know, quite lengthy. They can be 15 minutes. They can be a half hour, you know, just discussing the different symptoms and what's going on and, you know, would we be a match for treating their particular concerns. So what you would do is they call it an assessment, okay? Meaning it's there's a few ways. You can do a new patient inquiry, or you can do a short assessment and then, you know, let us know if you want us to reach out to you kind of thing, and then you'll have a conversation with a new patient advocate, you know, to get your questions answered. So best way would be to start with the Mind Eye Institute website, but for those people who also just want to check out those testimonials, we've got, I would use the phrase robust. It's a very robust YouTube channel that has a lot of testimonials, as Myrna was saying, but also it's got some links where there's some webinars that the doctors have done. One of the keys to talking with the new patient advocate, though, is depending on a person's specific, they'll send them some resources, usually some webinar links, so that then you can learn more about your kind of specific question and things like that. Now, having said that, obviously there are going to be cases where somebody will contact the clinic and they'll say, I've got this, and this, you know, do you treat, you know, or do you diagnose such and such? Mind Eye does not make a diagnosis over and beyond the visual stuff. So some people will say, well, can you tell me, do I have a TBI? You know, can you tell me that I had, do I have a concussion? We won't diagnose you, but we will work with you to help treat those symptoms. And so that's the key there. So I hope that answers it okay there.
Can I just add one other thing that I found helpful, and I still do, is that since I found you on Facebook, on a sponsored ad, and the testimonials were there, that was cool. You do have the Facebook page, and you do, Trzelinski goes live every now and then on Facebook Live, and it's a totally fascinating, amazing, like, hour with her. So I know you'll have a lot of those saved as YouTube, but I just wanted to mention to people that they can also follow and find your Facebook page and then follow it, and you'll be alerted of when there's a presentation.
Yes, and thank you so much for saying that. It's late here. It's almost 10:30, so my brain's shutting off a little, but I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yes, on the Facebook page, when we do these Facebook Live presentations, and you don't even need to actually have a Facebook account to watch them, but
right.
You are correct. Once a month or so, the doctors will do. Sometimes it's just an ask the doctor format. Other times it's a presentation with slides. I know that the patient advocates usually will email out these webinar links that the doctors have done, especially during COVID. We had the doctors did numerous different webinars on different topics. They did them on ADD, ADHD. They did them on traumatic brain injury. They did the effects of visual processing on learning. So, you know, for people who have learning disabilities, Dr. Zielinski did a few on autism. So the patient advocates, depending what somebody needs, they'll send them just the specific ones, but those typically are not on the YouTube or the website because we just will share those with people based upon what need they have. So, yeah, but thank you so much, Myrna, for again mentioning the Facebook because you're right. There's plenty of different ones on there right now tonight as we speak that anybody can click on, you know, if they have access, you know, to do so.
Okay. Okay, now I just want to say, if anybody who's listening to this show tonight while it's live has specific questions for Myrna or Kathy, please call in and press the number 1 so I can see that you have a question. Call in 424-243-9540 and press the number 1. That way I'll know that you have a question. Otherwise, you can reach out to either Kathy at the Mind Eye Institute or Myrna. Myrna, tell them how to get in touch with you.
Well, I'm on Facebook, Myrna, MYRNAHAYES, or you can get a hold of me by text or phone at 707-249-9633. And
okay.
I have an email too, which is you can just text me and I'll send you the email.
Thank you, Myrna. Okay, so I hope all the listeners hear that. If not, you might listen to it on the, you know, when you listen to this episode later. But I guess, Kathy, you're getting kind of tired probably where you are. I mean, Myrna and I are out here in California. We could talk forever.
Hey, I'll give you the phone number, though, too. Let me
yeah.
Give you that, too. So
okay.
You can reach out to us at 847-495-235.
And that's
why don't you repeat that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll read that again. 847-495-2385. And that would be during business hours, 8 a.m. to, I think they're usually there at least 6 p.m., probably 7 p.m.
Okay. And Kathy, what happens if they want to reach out to you personally because they've heard you tonight? How do they get in touch with you?
Sure. My Mind Eye number is 847-696-6710. And I'll say it once more. It's 847-696-6710.
Okay, thank you.
I was just going to mention that I think I had a hard time getting my arms around the possibility of or the logistics of going clear to Chicago area. But having only flown in and out of O'Hare and never gotten off the plane, it just turned out that I had to just deal with that, you know, and friends were supportive, and I just got up the courage because I really was pretty confident that you could help me somehow. But you just don't have a clinic in every major city or whatever. I know when I was there in the waiting room, there was a little boy from Canada somewhere, and I know he was they were going to go with him to a clinic in Calgary for something, and Dr. Zielinski was going to be on the phone with the optometrist, but he had clearly been there before because he was wearing his little goggles right. when he had them, and he was wearing his glasses. So I don't know, you know, what he looked like. He was only about 3 or 4 years old. So if he could do it, I could do it. So I would encourage you not let that be a discouragement.
Absolutely. No, you are correct. And what I'd like to say to that is, yes, the patients that come to the clinic come to us from all over the country and all over the world, actually. But I wanted to circle back to what you had described about your travel experience, because one of the things I often share is exactly what you shared, which is when I had my brain injury and I was struggling, you know, more towards, you know, the early part of that experience, I was struggling quite a bit. And this kind of ties in two things. It also ties in your cognitive ability in terms of intelligence. But what happened with me is I had my uncle down in Florida. He and his wife were going through some trying times. And I was at home basically living on my couch researching every waking hour. Okay, and I had to sleep, you know, pretty much every 2 to 2.5 hours I would sleep, then I would wake up and I would research wrong with my brain. And I did have to fly multiple times to Florida, but what I did is exactly what you described, and it's a wonderful thing to do, which is I got wheelchair assistance each time when I went back, and because, you know, you got to switch airports sometimes depending where you're going or coming from. And so I got it down to kind of a science, which was I would arrive at the ticket booth. I would tell them I had a brain injury. You don't even have to tell them that. You can just ask for a wheelchair. But I was okay with sharing that info. So I would tell them, I need a wheelchair. Just as you described it, they would get me from the ticketing area all the way to the gate. But in addition, I wore a baseball cap, sunglasses, and earplugs. Okay, and that was my way of trying to limit to the best of my ability the overstimulation of a busy airport, right? Then the other thing that was fabulous, not only did they get you on the wheelchair to the gate, they would then ask the people who needed a little extra time to board first. And then what I would do is I boarded first, and then I put my head down. I did not watch all the commotion on the plane because, again, movement triggers a lot of things when there's, you know, a lack of stability and balance between your vision, right? And so I put my head down, closed my eyes, I had my earplugs in, and I didn't get overstimulated at the airport. So I can't stress enough how important that you did that was and how that really saves your energy because you're not fighting with all the environmental stimuli. Right. So, again, we have patients that fly in from the East Coast and the West Coast all the time from all over the country. But I always, or I shouldn't say always, but often when I talk to people from another state or something or location, I will suggest get rid of any pride. You know, because you look fine. We know that, right? Get rid of the pride. Get that wheelchair because you're going to save a lot of energy in that travel end of things. And energy is at a premium when you've got a brain injury. So that was good for you. I appreciate you saying that too, Marnie. You've got so many great points. I think we're going to hire you.
Yeah, right. One of the last things I'll say is I'm going to put a plug in for your advising, your staff advising me to stay at the Sheraton, which is just like a mile and a half from your office. And it's just a piece of cake as well, you know, door-to-door service from the hotel to your little clinic. It's not intimidating. I grew up in a hospital. I hate hospitals. But you just have a small, comfortable little clinic, and it's all easy. And the hotel was very, very supportive, and took, you know, it was just easy. And especially now with those other services to the airport, you know, you can use one of them, and any time of day or night, you'll be fine. So I just want to encourage people who are fearful about that. And I have a service dog, and probably the biggest trauma was having to leave him behind because he's Jordan knows him, he would not be so great to fly on a plane with. So we thought about going on the train, thought about driving, and in the end, while I was gone, so.
Aww.
And he did. Yeah. He was crying when we did the Facebook Live of my return. He's just weeping. He's crying so much. But anyway, there you go.
Well, you sound like a true TBI warrior. Okay, and that's what I call
yep.
people who find themselves in this mess. You know, good can come out of it. Good is going to come out of it for you, obviously. It already is and will. But, I mean, you're a TBI fighter, warrior. I think that is something that is common amongst TBI survivors. You know, they're fighters because they have to be. You know, it's an uneven playing field in so many ways, but The great news is, you know, I'm proud of the team that I work with because they just get it. Like, you don't really have to explain in too much detail, you know, like when that was something that was so great about when I first arrived and met with Dr. Zielinski, and I started to describe some really, you know, bizarre symptoms that I was struggling with. And she just looked at me and she said, okay, And I'm looking at, really? I'm like, you know this? Like, I don't have to fight with you to prove to you that this is going on? I mean, it's such a 180 difference when you work with healthcare practitioners who understand TBI truly, you know, and not just from a theoretical textbook perspective. So
that's yeah. so true. Yeah, because after my head injury, about 5 years after, I developed epileptic seizures after my brain swelled and healed, went back. And I was having seizures like, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I was just having seizures all the time. I got to know the emergency room staff really well. And basically, they finally found a way to handle it. You know, but I was on 8 different medications, saw 8 different neurologists, and I felt like I was just arguing with medical doctors the entire time I was doing it. It's like,
oh,
there must be a better way. You know, I got
right.
so sick of it. And it's like, oh, come on, you people. You know, realize what's going on. But most of them have no idea. No idea.
They've had very limited training or they've just had textbook, you know, experience.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I went to a regular neurologist who totally didn't get it, had absolutely no understanding and just said, you look fine. There's no reason you can't go back to work, you know.
Yeah.
And he based that upon the CT scan and the MRI because
yeah.
they came back normal. Now, we want those
right.
tests to come back normal, but that does not mean that a person isn't struggling, you know.
Right.
And so they're using it as if it's a definitive, test to tell whether you have a brain injury or not. But brain injury quite often doesn't. I mean, sometimes it might, but, a good number or percentage of the time it does not show up on an MRI or a CT scan. So it's not an objective measurement of your struggle or your challenge, you know, that you're dealing with and things like that. But, wow, yeah, there's just so much here. But, I'm excited. And thank you again, Doran, for inviting me to participate or to get, the mind eye to give a little bit of info. And, we appreciate that. And Myrna, we appreciate you, that you're working so hard and you're making this progress.
Yeah, this is an alternative idea. So I've never heard of the Mind Eye Institute.
There you go.
So thank you, Myrna, for suggesting I do this.
Sure. Yep. Well, hopefully we've been able to help people. We certainly had a great conversation, three of us with bumps on our heads. So.
There you go. My orthopedics professor at chiropractic school made a movie of me failing all the neurological brain tests that you were talking about, Myrna, for driving.
Ooh.
Because chiropractors never see people in that position. And he thought it was great that I was in school, so he made a movie of me. For the next 10 years, I had people coming up to me at seminars saying, "You look familiar, and I can't figure out why." Were you in so-and-so's class? Maybe you saw a video. Because he had this movie of me failing test after test after test. All the drug tests.
Wow.
My
neurologist said that I couldn't possibly have had a brain injury because he kept on saying, "But you didn't hit your head on your window. You didn't hit your head on your window." And he said it a lot of times. And I was like, you could have a brain injury even without hitting your head on anything. I hydroplaned into a semi truck in a storm. Then I hit the center divide. Then I ricocheted back and then back again.
That's enough for
you. Yeah. So I get what you're saying about these. I don't know what they are taught, but there's a lot of things they just have never experienced. So
all right. These lawyers. For the patients I deal with my chiropractic practice, patients in an accident, they have a lawyer. These lawyers want an MRI, to prove that, they're injured. I said, an MRI won't necessarily prove it. We've proven it to our satisfaction, and the brain injury upper cervical tests show that this person is not functioning properly. The nerves coming from the brain to their spine are not working right. And, can you get an MRI proof of that? It's like, what makes you think the MRI is
going to
show anything?
As an extra help as far as the audience goes, if I might interject something related to what you just said, Dora. I think we all can agree we've been through this problem, right, where the wrong test is given and then all kinds of assumptions are made following that test. And then what's also terrible about that is then if one person doesn't believe you, especially if it's, one of the early on doctors, then what happens is their notes follow you and are harmful to you. So I went through that with my initial neurologist who basically had just made a determination in his mind that I didn't have an injury, that I had only taken a small hit and my CT scan and MRI were normal. Therefore, in parentheses, hint, I was faking, right? There are a few tests that I might suggest to the listeners that can at least be helpful. And when I say helpful, they're not going to resolve your symptoms or anything like that. But the name of the game is, this is what I figured out. The name of the game was objective measurement.
Yes.
I needed something called objective measurement. Otherwise, I was not going to get any believability because I looked fine. So one test that I got, and I had to be shuffled through numerous doctors before anybody would agree to give it to me, was a video nystromography test, okay, or VNG test, okay? And
yes.
And that test, what's that?
Yeah, right. Go on.
And so that's a test that will measure the type of involuntary eye movement you have called nystagmus that some people get. And nystagmus is when you can have your eyes are jerking, okay? Like they can go up and down or side to side and you can't control it, all right?
Right.
And so the video nystromography or VNG test can help at least show that, we'll say. Also, it can help the doctors understand your vestibular disorder if you have one as a result of the injury, right? And so people who have balance problems, oftentimes they'll say, oh, you have an inner ear infection or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Lots of symptoms get tossed off to something else that's unrelated. Everything but a brain injury kind of thing, right? So anyway, so the video nystomography, a big mouthful to say, VNG,
yeah,
is one thing that a person might try to push for to get for testing. Another test that we actually use at the clinic is called a right eye test, and that is a test, it's eye tracking technology, okay?
Mm.
And so we use that technology so that, we can know and again, objectively identify visual irregularities, like the eyes will be doing, just different things, in terms of, the eyes, whether they've got the nystagmus, what are your eyes doing when you're reading, things like that. Do you have a binocular vision disorder of some type, and are your eyes able to track in sync, all right, which often they're not after a brain injury. So a VNG, a right eye test, okay, are a few options. And then I'm trying to think, what else is objective, okay? And I think it escapes my mind at the moment, but those are at least two, because that became the thing that I was really after. You can have neurofeedback QEEG testing, and a QEEG can show indications of different things in your brain function, okay? So, there are different actual objective measurements that your typical medical practitioner may be unaware of or not suggest. And again, with the reliance upon x-rays, CT scans, and MRIs, that if they come up normal, which again is, of course, what you want, it does work against you, though. So
yeah.
Anyway, I thought you gave me an opportunity to think about that one and remember to mention that, as a helpful piece of info for people.
Yes, very good. No, I've had the right eye people and a couple EEG practitioners on the show discussing their craft already. So very, very helpful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good.
Well, I was very excited about it because I felt, I'm not going to lie here, I felt desperate for objective measurement because I was being very unfairly. And by the way, I have to say, that is a very common story that I'm sharing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's really something when I would speak to people when I was talking a lot to different patients who were calling the clinic and I was helping with some of the patient advocacy, people were just feeling so validated in the conversation because they're like, you know, you guys are the first people I've spoken to who understand what I'm describing here, you know? So it's like you're in the land of no man's land. I think I used that phrase before. Quite often when you're bouncing doctor to doctor, hoping that somebody will understand, you know? So, but I did find, and especially if there's an accident involved, you know, that objective measurement is going to be important. Doran, to your point, though, the MRI and the CT are not going to show the objective data that you need. So if you're in a lawsuit and you've got to prove something, again, you've got to find testing that will, you know, be able to show more detail.
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, testing that will show what you've got.
This is it. This is true.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, luckily, I've always been the type of person, I don't believe what anyone tells me if they think they know better than I do, because I, of course, know best. And
you know.
And nobody else is saying anything has, you know, most of them don't know what they're talking about, and I accept that, and I just go on from there. So I didn't necessarily expect anyone to believe me. I mean, I wrote a bunch of letters and actually got the Department of Workers' Compensation, the federal department, to agree that, yes, my seizures were caused by my head injury. Because they were trying to tell me that, no, they weren't caused by that. Able to convince the United States government, but yes, in fact, they actually did. So they're stuck, you know, paying for my seizure meds for the rest of my life. Yippee! Nothing else.
No, but you're right. I mean, that's the job of the that unfortunately, in the way things are structured right now, is that's the job of the independent medical examiner quite often, is to get you settled and be done with the case so they don't have to pay more money. And so, you know, it just becomes very important, you know, to get the objective type of evaluations.
Agency, and you know, like most of Western medicine, you know, they think they, you know, understand a few things, they understand everyone and have it all down. No, they don't.
Yeah. I make my statements, I need to do that disclaimer, though, and say the statements that I just made, you know, are not necessarily mind-eye statements, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, I'm saying those more as Kathy the person in my experience,
Kathy's an experienced person who's had a brain injury,
Yeah, exactly, you know, So, you know, but those are important things for somebody who's new to this or somebody who's even not new to this, that they realize the importance of having, you know, some objective measurement and that type of thing. So,
yes, very nice. Okay, so this show's about done taping. So do either of you guys or both of you guys have any closing statements you'd like to make?
Well, I'm just very thankful for MindEye for having this opportunity to talk with both of you, and I'm looking forward to, you know, without a crystal ball, but very interested to see what other changes I'll observe and experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's exciting. I'm excited for you. I'm always excited when I hear people are moving forward to get the help they need. You know what I mean? And so thank you, Doran, so much, and Myrna for thinking about inviting, you know, MindEye to give a viewpoint, you know, in this conversation. This was really, I think, informative, you know, great to talk to both of you ladies who totally understand, you know, and I think, again, Doran, and for both of you, really doing podcasts like this You know, you're empowering people. You know, when they learn what can be helpful to them, that's empowerment, because knowledge is empowerment, you know. And so, again, I can't thank you enough for the invite. And, we look forward to answering questions. You know, if anybody's, you know, listening that would like to reach out to us, definitely do. And, we'll go from there.
Well, thank you very much, both of you. I've really enjoyed talking to you both tonight. This was an especially fun show, and I thank you guys both so much.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
Take care. Good night.
Goodbye, everybody. Okay. So in the last 5 minutes of the show, I think I'll just play some music and we'll just go off with the music. Let me find a good song here that we can use for our send-off, because this was a really impactful show tonight and the eyes can influence a lot. And because the eyes influence so much, we take them for granted. We never even realize what they can do and what they do for us all the time. So it's very important to realize that, yeah, they do help us, and eyes are an important, very important aspect of recovering from a brain injury. And I just want to play a song here, Ambient Dreamy, by Nicholas Deton. Good night, everybody.